Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? Get your vaccine. Vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There are some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Today is Wednesday, right? Yeah, Wednesday, December 1st. It is one more month left of 2021.
Whew. When did that happen?
It was better than 2020.
It was better than 2020. That's a good point.
It was a good rebound if your standards are really low. Yeah. If you're coming from like a really toxic ex, which we were.
What I was going to say was it both felt like it went by so fast. And also, I think about stuff that happened in January, and it feels like it was like 5 years ago.
Yeah. 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 I mean, we're almost a year away from the insurrection. That was like basically 2020. It was like greater 2020.
Oh, yeah. January. That was kind of the first thing that went down. Cool.
Yeah.
TBT. I mean, quite a thing.
We're talking about our holiday episodes, and we definitely have to do some sort of superlatives and retrospectives because a lot of shit went down that I completely have blacked out already. That was in fact this year.
I remember last year when y'all did the Betches holiday thing and you played that game where it was like, yes, what happened in 2020?
Oh yes, yes, exactly.
And it was like, hard.
I lost. It was really
it was
hard.
It was really challenging. We could definitely do that. We could definitely do that again.
For sure.
Also wanted to this morning, of course. 'Tis the season. The Spotify Wrapped lists are out, and it's just so fun to see everybody calling us out and like seeing how much time you've spent with us. It's timely because tomorrow is the Betches Sup's 600th episode.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh my God.
600 of these, guys. 600.
That's insane.
And that's all you, Amanda, right?
I'm on most of them. I think I showed up around 150.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Still.
I guess I go back to number one when I was on.
You go back to numero
Facebook
uno
Live with Sammy, but it's so different now. And thank God we have Amanda because it used to just be me kind of googling stuff and like.
It has evolved and grown with the audience. Lots of like fun people saying this morning that they've listened from the beginning. So thank you very much. People say it's like a parasocial relationship, and I'm like, you're our friends. It's fine.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
Definitely.
We're friends. Me. All right, back to you. I got time.
Yeah.
Listen. Listen, I know y'all are my friends.
All right, so we're going to get right into it because we have a lot to talk about today. First, we're going to, of course, address the tragedy in Michigan yesterday. A 15-year-old suspect is in custody after he shot and killed 3 students and injured 8. The gun was purchased days ago by the student's father legally. This particular event produced a lot of social media videos from the students themselves that I found personally really jarring. Students described grabbing scissors and other heavy objects to defend themselves, and I'm sure you guys saw the video of students refusing to exit a classroom when a person claiming to be a police officer seemed suspicious to them. They're actually still investigating this. The sheriff has said that law enforcement has heard that the shooter tried to get into the barricaded rooms by pretending to be a police officer. They're still investigating that video, but I mean, no, it seems like it could be easy to figure out, like, did any of us knock on the door? Was that any of us? So I think it's really kind of unusual. They're not saying that yet. In any event, those kids went out the window. We'll be watching that. And it's 3 that have passed away, but some of these kids are in critical condition, and it remains to be seen how many fatalities there will be. There have been 651 mass shootings in the year 2021, and that's according to Gun Violence Archive, which defines mass shootings as an event with 4 or more injuries. That's up from both 2020 and 2019. It's barely up from 2020 when you would have thought like people were generally inside, but no, it's been about the same for the past 3 years, but it's been going up.
That's terrible. I mean, you know, a lot of people have been saying online that, like, you know, when we talk about, we wish that, like, people were as up in arms about guns as they are about critical race theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, what's actually dangerous
especially
to your fucking
in
kid?
Schools, yeah.
Yeah, what's actually dangerous to your kid? I just wonder, like, if the dad got it legally, like, what kind of gun was it? You know, it's just kind of, like, unfortunate. And I'm also wondering what YouTube, you know, what online and, like, YouTube and Facebook channels this child was consuming.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this is all very early, but apparently he shot at least 30 rounds, which would suggest, like, he was there, like, just indiscriminately ready to shoot a lot of people.
Yeah, when I was writing about this for the newsletter today, it's always very affecting when these things happen, yeah. But there was something about the pictures of these three victims that were like,
yeah,
they're so young and they're so like one of them is this kid in like his football gear standing on the football field. Another's kind of like a blurry selfie of this cute girl who turned out to be 14 years old.
Yeah, I'll read their names. The football player is 16-year-old Tate. Well, I think it's Meyer or Merce, 17-year-old Madison Baldwin, and 14-year-old Hannah St. Juliana were all killed yesterday.
Terrible. Yeah, and like Madison, there's a beautiful picture of her like wearing a hat in the fall. Like all of these kids, I mean, any kid that's that young is like brimming with potential. Even the shooter is someone who was brimming with potential where like we're going to have to figure out where society failed this kid that he ended up with a gun in his hands. I mean, we know where the failure ended up there, so we don't have any rules. But like, how did he get to the place where he is? I'm sure we'll find out more, but then it's also because it's a minor, like, who knows?
Yeah, Shannon Watts is really good at pointing out, like, yes, he got it legally, so then the question is, how do we prevent this? And it's like, there are just the saturation of guns in this country is so beyond incomparable to anywhere else in the world. This is not normal for this many people to have deadly weapons at their disposal at all times.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. It's like challenging to imagine like what I can't really foresee a federal mandatory buyback happening.
No.
So
even an optional buyback. Like,
no,
they've tried to do that. And then I feel like a lot of people would sell their guns back.
There are some people who need very little motivation to sell their guns back. But these are also probably the people that are like, not using them that often. I don't know, it's just a hobby. It's not something that's like they've connected to their identity.
I do also feel like we've been seeing a lot of just like parent complicity in a lot of this gun violence. Like, didn't I don't want to speak out of turn, but I'm pretty sure Kyle Rittenhouse's parents bought him the gun that the AR-15 that he used. A friend did. Okay.
Yeah, but he was not old enough to have it.
Yeah, right. That's it.
But, like, the parents probably knew he had it.
Yeah, like, they have, like, a gun culture in the house, I guess is what I mean. And, like, who knows what the gun culture was going on at this kid's house where his dad's going to have a weapon that he just bought and isn't locked up in any way. It's like, why did he have access to his dad's gun?
Yeah, I mean, aren't there laws about, like, I mean, I guess the laws about having to be concealed, I mean, how do you can't retroactively enforce them, obviously. I mean, there's not going to be, like, you know, routine inspections on gun owners' homes to make sure they're okay. I don't know if that's the solution.
Yeah,
I don't think that politically that would be favorable.
I'm sure that'll be received well.
Fauci shows up. Can I see your vaccine card? Make sure
Dr. Fauci comes to your door to give you a vaccine and see where you keep your guns.
100% approval.
Yeah, I'm also just like, guns are not cheap. They're very expensive. And I'm like, I don't know anything about this kid's family. But I'm just like, a normal 15-year-old that has active parents who are invested in his life and all this shit doesn't go to school and try to and shoot 30 rounds. So I'm like, what could this dad have used that money for? To, like, better that kid's life fucking instead of buying a gun. Like, these guns are, like, $700, $1,000, $2,000. Yeah. They're not cheap. And I'm just like,
why isn't there a supply chain crisis with guns? Why can't we make that happen?
Like, why didn't he take his kid to the fucking movies? or go to like
go on vacation. Do something else.
$1,000, you can make. You can have a nice vacation.
Yeah, and we don't know much about him because he's obviously a minor, and they can't question without his parents, and his parents are not having him talk. I certainly hope that the fatality count ends at 3, but like this is gonna happen again. I mean, I only think about it when this happens, and obviously kids think about it all the time, but Jesus Christ, it must be so terrifying to go to school every day. My God.
That is so, I mean, it's so scary, and it's also really scary, especially like in that story about the kids like strategizing together that like these kids actually have thought of this now at this point, and it's a part of their understanding of their safety is to actually know like, you're not supposed to go by the door. You're supposed to do this. Check this. Don't open the door for anyone. Like, they shouldn't know what to do in that situation. Exactly. I'm glad that they did, but they shouldn't know what to do in that situation. But these kids are so, it is such a threat to their safety that they actually do have strategies for what to do.
Yeah. And the fact that they were able to employ them is the only reason why this wasn't worse, because it could have been so much worse.
Yeah.
And it's three teenagers are dead. Yet it could have been so much worse.
I know.
And
another one has no, their life is effectively over.
Over.
The suspect. All right, we're going to do one more bit. Well, actually, it's not a lot of positive news in today. So I'll just say the next headline.
Yeah.
This is why we all process this together for what I think mine said 11,000 minutes a year.
Whoa.
So if you follow reproductive rights closely, the date December 1st has loomed large in recent months. We are here. So today, the Supreme Court hears arguments in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. This is a challenge to a Mississippi law that's currently on hold that bans abortions after 15 weeks. Fetal viability is typically between 22 and 24 weeks. So by accepting this case, the Supreme Court has decided to maybe that restrictions before viability might not present an undue burden, and maybe they're not unconstitutional. We have been saying it's alarming that the court even decided this is worth looking at again, because in the past it has said no. Mississippi legislators, they want to do this because they believe that Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey have, quote, no basis in the Constitution. They're saying that's wrongly decided. People have no constitutional right to an abortion. Something that is really enraging is that Mississippi is also going to argue that the law doesn't pose an undue burden to women in the state, because right now there's only one clinic left and it doesn't even provide abortions past 16 weeks, which to me just says they have trap-lawed their way in to claiming that this is banning abortion is no longer an undue burden. We're going to have one of our favorites, Imani Gandhi, on tomorrow, host of the Boom Lawyer podcast, just like you follow her on Twitter, you know her, to break down what's happening today. So we'll put some asks out for what people want to know. But I was like sick this morning.
Yeah,
I'm nervous about this podcast. Yeah,
I'm nervous about it. I don't feel great about it.
I mean, yeah, like just let people have abortion.
Stop doing this.
It's so insane. I know. Just stop. You know all the arguments. We can't point out how hypocritical it is. I mean, one thing that Mississippi is trying to claim is that abortions after 15 weeks are somehow more dangerous. That's obviously not true, but no abortion, except for a back alley abortion, is more dangerous than childbirth. In this country, childbirth happens to be incredibly dangerous. We said yesterday women are twice as likely to die. If you're a black woman, you're fucking lucky to survive childbirth.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. And yeah, I mean, again, one of my favorite pieces that like helped me understand abortion was, I think, this Esquire piece about the last abortion clinic in Mississippi. I think, I wonder if it's the same one. And it came out in 2014, and it's just like fascinating, like the kind of women that get abortion. It's like all kinds of women, why they get it and all that stuff. And it's just like, I just personally feel like if you don't want to have a baby, that's good enough reason to not have a baby.
Totally.
And it's just scary. I mean, it's just tough because on one end, I can see why people have been disillusioned by Democrats, you know what I mean? And like, but you know, Biden promised all these things. They're making some things happen, but not all the things they promised. And people are disappointed. And people are like, right. What's the point of voting? But this is the point of voting, right? Because it's not, you know, Trump has left a really, like, it's not just, it's the judges, you know, and mm-hmm. it's terrible and it's fucked up. They're cheating now on gerrymandering.
This is happening today because Trump won. So, like, Trump is still in power.
A Trump-appointed judge just struck down Biden's vaccine mandate for healthcare workers and put an put an injunction on it. So the mandate was supposed to go into effect next week, and now it's not because some Trump judge says that you can't. So it's serious what's going on with the courts.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's his legacy.
That activated
and it's
Siri
like
on my computer.
one thing that's interesting, though, is that Biden, maybe we'll do a show about this, maybe not, it's kind of boring, but like Biden is like going ham on the judges too. Like they're like sort of quietly trying to restore balance and appointing more people. It might be more than Trump at this point. Like they're going for it. And they're appointing really interesting people that aren't obviously conventional, which would mean, you know, just like old white guys, some really cool people. So that's sort of happening. And like you said, it's key because these things that like affect all of our health and safety.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I doubt that the Kenosha, like the Kyle Rittenhouse judge was a Trump appointed judge. But like that is also like an example of how much power judges have. And like that happened in Kenosha. And like, I know people are going to, I know going back to Kyle Rittenhouse, because I know we're talking, but like people are emboldened by what happens in other places, even though.
Yes.
I'm like, y'all are not going to get away with it. Like this was a special case, but like, it's these ripple effects. So that's just what I was thinking too of like, I know that to me it can feel like, so like, what's the point? But it's like, this is the point. Other people have not, and we're just getting to that point with Republicans where they don't care about the Constitution. It doesn't make sense. There's no decency. We can't wait for them on anything. Bad faith. We just have to assume bad faith at all times. And if that, then like, you know, I wish and I hope that for the future of the Democratic Party, we start getting better at playing offense, you know?
Yes, and we have to.
We have to, because we're doing defense and it's not enough.
It's no longer like what's at stake is if we can do the things that we like to do. Like the future of all of our rights is at everything on the fucking planet, and the democracy is at stake. The republic is at stake. It's no longer just like, oh, it'd be nice to have who we like in there. No, it's not fair, but
yeah.
Anyway, happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life. And of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
All right, finally today, this is a great, we're having kind of like a true crimey week, Elise. Mm-hmm. I like it. So you've probably heard, except that both stories are very, very devastating to everybody involved. You've probably heard of the book The Lovely Bones by Alice Siebold. I actually never read it. Did you guys?
I watched the movie. Read it.
Mm-hmm. The movie has Stanley Tucci, right?
Yeah, I think he's the murderer. And Mark Wahlberg? Yeah. It was disturbing. Yeah.
It's always been on my list, and now I'm kind of like, yeah.
It was just like, I don't know. I'm just like, I have to be very careful with like movies that are intentional tear jerkers that like you're gonna fucking sob, like, but not even cool, like Coco. But it's definitely Coco level sobbing.
Got it. Okay, I will not be watching that. This news update doesn't relate to that book by Allison Siebold. It relates to another one she wrote called Lucky. This book, they're both really intense books. The first one deals with a rape and murder, and the second one, the Lucky, I don't know what order she wrote them. I think she wrote Lucky first, because that one details her own attack. When Alice Siebold was 18 years old, she was a student at Syracuse University in 1982 when she was raped by someone unknown to her in a park. So she eventually became convinced a man named Anthony Broadwater was her attacker after seeing him on the street. He was arrested. This was despite the fact that the composite sketch made didn't match her description at all. I mean, you have one job. And she identified a different man in a police lineup. Siebold also told the prosecutor she was confused because Broadwater looked similar to the man next to him in the lineup, who was also a black man. Oh, notable, Anthony Broadwater is black. The prosecutor told her they probably did that on purpose. They were probably friends who showed up together to trick her. I know that's not allowed. And that was not true. They were strangers. But she later identified Broadwater as her attacker in court. He was convicted of first-degree rape and 5 other charges. He spent 16 years in prison. He was released after serving that time for that alleged crime in 1988. But he was, of course, forced to register as a sex offender. And he's been advocating for his innocence ever since. He has never admitted to this. He was denied parole several times for refusing to acknowledge his guilt. He passed numerous polygraph tests decades apart. And finally, his efforts to – he was never successful with this. He hired multiple lawyers. He's tried this over and over again.
5 times.
Yeah. Recently, Lucky was going to be turned into a film. And this raised some new questions about the case. Like, actually, an executive producer on the film, he started having concerns. Stuff started happening. The film's financing fell through. But this executive producer – this, which is a New York Times article I read. I don't want to white savior this too much, but this is what the article said, that this executive producer started to look into this as well, and he hired an investigator to look into the case. Everybody noticed these issues that we've already said, as well as also finding that he had been convicted based on a method of microscopic hair analysis that has since been discredited. So lots of stuff wrong, and eventually they got him hooked up with a lawyer who was successful, and on Monday of this week, Anthony Broder was finally exonerated. A state judge, his defense lawyers, the district attorney, who I think was even the prosecutor at the time, agreed that the case against him was bullshit and that it was flawed. There's, like, no way to compare wrongful conviction cases, but, like, this one is just – this guy, there was a book written about his alleged brutal crime, and, you know, millions of people thought that he did this, and he said, quote, "On my two hands, I can count the people that allowed me to grace their homes and dinners, and I don't get past 10. And he didn't do it.
I think what was interesting for this case, for me, when I read the article, was that, like, there was something called cross-racial identification.
Yeah.
And how, like, it's kind of like a joke, like, all black people look alike, or all these people look alike. And, like, it's like a phenomenon about, you know, about, like, how people can't identify or tell people in different races apart. And, like, that tends to be, like, inaccurate. And, I mean, not to go back again to critical race theory, but, like, this is why this is an elective in law school, to show how the law is biased against non-white people, you know, and, like, different procedures and things and stuff like this is a reality of this country because of stuff like that. And also another thing that just bummed me out about this thing was that this guy was married and, you know, he told his wife and his wife believed him that he didn't do it. But, like, he said, my wife wanted kids and I never had kids because I was on the sex offender list. And I just didn't want to bring kids into this world where their dad was a potential rape, you know, or whatever. So it just makes me sad, you know.
16 years of someone's life, like,
and there's no since 16... after that because everybody believed he did that.
Yeah, and there's no 16 years of your life that you'd be like, those are the 16 I'll just say I don't need. Like, you want every minute.
Terrible.
And I think I've been following this case for a couple of days. Like, I started following it when I started reading about the exoneration, and then just kind of following to see what, like, people were saying about it. And it's just, it's so sad to me because it's such an intersection of so many things that we talk about, and, like, you know, it's really hard as an 18-year-old girl on a campus who was just raped to get the police to pay attention to you unless you're accusing a random black man who doesn't have it. Like, it's so interesting to see the way that the criminal justice system went into effect for this allegation, whereas there are so many mm-hmm. women who come forward and literally actually do know who raped them.
Good guy. Mm-hmm.
And it does. Yeah. It doesn't get to that point. So I think that it really just goes back to a lot of what we've been talking about like the flaws in our criminal justice system. Like, the police in this situation should have been trained to say, you know what, this is not actually like a sound allegation that we're getting yeah. right now. And this is a girl who's just been the victim of an attack, and she might have racial bias that we should have been trained on to understand. But none of them did. And two lives are ruined as a result of this. And the actual rapist, who knows if he raped other yep. people and went free.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, it's just like, it's perpetuating that thing of like, oh, you're more, because how many people do you think were date raped at the college campus? You know, and like, it's an actual mm-hmm. issue, but it's like, it's perpetuating the, when law officers prosecute someone like this, it's perpetuating the idea that like, oh, you have to like, you have to be careful about walking in the park by yourself and not like be careful at the frat party with your drink yeah. or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? And another thing that I was thinking about was that, you know, we don't want to white savior it or anything like that. But at the same time, like, it is like a good use of white privilege of yeah, like, yeah, this yeah, guy yeah, yeah. did bring attention. Like, this guy, there's a reason why white savior things like are yeah, more yeah, effective. Yeah. And it is just like this executive producer saw flaws himself and took it upon himself. Which
and he had something
so
to lose
great.
With this movie not happening. And
he lost money because he would have made a lot of money if he would have just ignored it and whatever. And he would have made a lot of money. So it is cool. And like, again, it's not like it's delicate because you don't want to be like, oh, thank God for yeah. this man who did everything. But at the same time, like, this man, you know, Broadwater, he did it 5 times and no one cared and no one paid attention until a white executive producer said something. So it is, there's something to be said about allyship and support and all that stuff.
Yeah, like, we ideally want to get to a place where Broadwater's attempts are as valid and valued as this guy's. But until we get there, it is nice that he took a step back and was like, wait, I actually see major flaws in this, which must have been like extremely apparent, because he said basically it was like between reading the memoir and reading the mm-hmm. script he started to have questions right. mm-hmm. And it's just interesting to think, like, I wonder how many people around her have had questions, or how many questions she maybe had herself that she didn't want to like
even
ask
the book
answer.
which came out a year after he was released, and I wonder if that played into the urgency, is like, this wasn't, a lot of times you hear about wrongful convictions and there's the urgency because it's like, we need to get this person either off of death row or out of prison. Mm-hmm. And he was released in 1998 and her book came out in 1999. So he's just been like, but he's been living. He's like, at least, like you said, he was a sex offender.
Yeah.
Even in her book, she does, like, the book details issues, which is interesting too. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think the book is really like, this is an open and shut case. I think she believes that's who she believed at the time, that's who raped her, but she details probably just sort of show how the process can be so traumatic for victims. Mm-hmm. But really what she was really exposing was like, this is not how it's supposed to go. So she wrote a letter or a post on Medium yesterday. It's very contrite and it acknowledges that there's no apology that's acceptable. She specifically apologized and said she regretted having, quote, unwittingly played a part in, quote, a system that sent an innocent man to jail. It's a lot of that. And she notes that this failure means that her rapist was never held accountable. More compelling than anything she wrote is Broadwater's response, which was, quote, it took a lot of courage, and I guess she's brave and weathering through the storm like I am. To make that statement, it's a strong thing for her to do, understanding that she was a victim and I was a victim too. Which is just so much more generous than he needed to
yeah.
be.
I really do hope that she gives him some money.
Yeah. He needs money from somebody.
He should get money from like the state or whatever, but I think
yeah, he should have a lawsuit on it. He has a lawsuit on his hands now that he has some good lawyers.
I think a little payout from Alice to him would yeah, probably
make
be
sense.
Appropriate. And I do think that the ultimate villain of this story is the police department.
Yes,
that,
yes, definitely.
Like, allowed this to happen. But, I mean, yeah, I think that she should probably give that man some money.
And not just because she's a lady that happens to be rich, but because those riches came directly from profiting off this story that she that affected him.
Well, I want to see this movie now.
I want to see this movie.
Okay, here's the thing. So they are making a documentary. This same executive producer, I guess, saw an opportunity. They are making a movie about it.
Good.
Do you want to guess what it's titled? The documentary?
Unlucky.
She's so lucky.
It is titled Unlucky.
Yeah. I knew it. I've got that industry brain, baby.
I thought it was going to be like a Britney Spears, like, lucky.
Literally.
No, but unlucky.
Unlucky is what it will be called. And just like, yeah, well, thank God this man. If there are any fundraisers for him, I will
There's
I will
a GoFundMe. There is
okay,
one.
Okay, great. Yeah, we will definitely share that. That is our show for today. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye.
Bye.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.